You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. A lot going on today. The 7th billionth human joined us on this planet. Fascinating. We're going to be talking about the pipeline, this Keystone XL pipeline that the Koch brothers and their friends want to build across the United States. There's some pushback coming from the northern states because this is all for export. So it's going to raise the cost of gasoline because that stuff is being refined way up north. It's going to raise the cost of gasoline and diesel oil in particular in, you know, Midwestern states, Michigan and whatnot, by as much as 20 cents a gallon. Steve Larson is going to drop by in our second our third hour. Ronald Bailey will be here. In our second hour, Steve Larson is going to drop by the origins of Halloween. Very strange stuff here. And Kyle Olson, the founder and CEO of Education Action Group, who says that far-left teachers and the New York Times are promoting lesson plans on Occupy Wall Street. Interesting. Right now, Crockett Keller is with us. He is a handgun instructor and real estate agent. His website, kellersstore.com. Nice website, Crockett. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And I see that one of the things that you do is you sell handguns and you offer handgun instruction.
That's correct.
I'm a graduate of the Georgia Police Academy. I don't, at this moment, own a gun. My brother owns a whole bunch of them. And whenever we go back to Michigan, he does competitive shooting. And but, you know, I went through the training through the Georgia Police Academy, and I don't recall, and for 2 years I was licensed as a private detective in the state of Georgia, and I don't recall them ever asking me my politics or religion.
I don't ask politics or religion.
Okay. Well, I understand you're on record as saying that you would not train a person in how to use a handgun if they were a liberal or a Muslim. And did I get that wrong? He hung up. Oh, okay. Okay. So much for Crockett Keller. I guess he can really handle the tough interviews, can't he? If you want to say hi to him, it's kellersstore.com is his website. He's a state-certified handgun instructor down in Texas who, according to the story, refuses to teach Muslims and Obama supporters. But maybe not. We haven't heard his story, so let's not prejudge him. Anyhow, oh, he's back. Great. You are back, sir.
Yes, I'm on my cell number, and so I will tell you if I'm going to hang up on you, okay?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, I was just saying, you know, I'm not sure what happened. Let's not prejudge Crockett here. He just, you know, he's not here to tell his own story. And so one of the ground rules of this show, and has been for 9 years, is if people call in, particularly after my guests have been on, and they want to trash the guest, I just don't let them do it because that person's not there to defend themselves. So anyhow, it's been reported that you refuse to teach Muslims and Obama supporters how to use a handgun. Is that true?
I ask that they not come to attend my class. That's what I ask.
Okay, but if they show up...
I have not prohibited anybody. I have yet to ever discriminate against anybody for any reason.
Okay. Well, I honor that. I'm curious if Tim McVeigh had showed up, if you would have trained him.
That would have been a terribly unfortunate thing. Part of my reasoning in all of this is I think back and I look back at the flight instructors that taught the 19 Arabs how to fly airplanes straight and level, or to make banking turns, but not how to take off and not how to land. I have hindsight. I'm sorry that they didn't.
Well, actually, several of those guys contacted the FBI and said there's something fishy going on here. And the FBI, well, you know, the short story is there was a massive breakdown in communications at the federal government level that led George Bush to create the Department of Homeland Security and try to integrate those communications because, you know, those guys, several of those instructors, and in fact, the one guy up in, what was it, Minnesota, who just went to trial like a few months ago, actually got busted for this. You know, he was busted because the flight instructor turned him in and said, this guy doesn't want to know how to land on an airplane. There's something wrong with this. And so he would have been the 20th hijacker. So it seemed to me that if you are concerned about these issues, and I think we all share that concern, that the smart thing to do would be to take on anybody. And if somebody's acting weird or talking strange, you're saying, you know, I really want to know how to take a, you know, put a 30 round clip into this machine, into this weapon, and modify it from semi-automatic to fully automatic, or, you know, anything like that that would raise your alarm bells, call the FBI.
Well, and that's exactly what we do when somebody, you know, does that. But I have part of my issue there is that I have students out there taking these classes. Some of them are novice, well, slightly more than novices with a gun, and others are a little bit more adept at using handguns.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just don't want to have an individual out there that will all of a sudden turn around and say, Allah Akbar, to the rest of the class and mow them down. I mean, sure, they're going to have guns, and maybe if they're quick enough, they can stop him. But, you know, I just don't want that issue.
Here's the thing that confuses me. You know, as a liberal who's very competent with a handgun,
okay.
I've been keeping.
I've been keeping track of this. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Well, I've been keeping track of this for a long time, and it seems to me that the political shootings and the mass murders in the United States and whatnot, by and large, I mean outside of Tim McVeigh, have not been political. They have been crazies, by and large, and I would want instructors like you to be looking for that, reporting people like that. And but this whole political litmus test, I mean, what makes you think that because somebody supports President Obama or they're a liberal, that they would be more likely to use a weapon to, for example, murder a doctor, as has happened 4 or 5 times in the last decade or so in the United States, or, you know, commit a terrorist act, as has, you know, in fact, the most recent one in Washington State, an attempt anyway, had the bomb gone off, it probably would have killed a couple hundred people. You know, what makes you think that liberals or supporters of Obama represent such a threat to this country that you shouldn't teach them how to use a weapon?
That was not the inference in my ad. What I said is I asked that they not take my class. And
why?
It was a tongue in cheek thing, kind of a jab at some of my local, liberal friends. And the whole thing is that I have approximately 10 hours to educate someone, as to the reasons and, the rationale, as to when and why and how you can defend yourself when you have this perception of fear of bodily harm.
Right, legally, you mean, in your state. We just have 1 minute left, just to give you a warning.
I have 2 hours to, I'm sorry, I have 10 hours to do that. And my jab was the fact that, in my opinion, they had a year and a half to vet their candidate, and I feel like they got it wrong.
I have to say, if I may, very quickly, and hopefully you'll have time to respond, it seems to me fundamentally unpatriotic to say that you'll provide a service to one group, political group, and not to another.
I asked them not to take it. It was a jab. It was meant more tongue-in-cheek. I will not refuse service to anybody.
Okay. All right. So you meant it as a, yeah. Okay. All righty. I got it. Crockett Keller, handgun instructor and real estate agent. Keller's Store, two S's. KellersStore.com is the website. Crockett, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you very much, Tom. Have a good day.
Yeah, good speaking with you. And take care and teach people well. We will be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Should we pass a law that says that conservatives can't take handgun instruction?
All you have to do is walk up to a house, ring the doorbell, and say tricks or treats.
Are you sure it's legal?
Of course it's legal.
I put a spell on you.
And welcome back. Hartman here with you. Jacob is running the board, I'm as I look past the camera at him, You can see the picture of him on our homepage at TomHartmann.com. And is your mic hot, Jacob? Can you make it hot real fast? I would like you to tell us the story of what you're wearing. It's hysterical. Herman Cain, by the way, was just on Fox News saying that he was falsely accused of sexual harassment. Anyhow, Jacob, your face is all covered with oil, and you are wearing a green jumpsuit.
Yes, I work for Bad Planning, a.k.a. BP.
Right. And it's that BP green with the yellow starburst on it. It's right. BP on it.
And I'm one of their oil rig mechanics today for Halloween.
I see, for Bad Planning, BP Planning. And he came in on the Metro that way.
Nobody else on the trains was dressed up this morning, so I got lots of crazy looks.
Yeah, and you said you could tell who worked for the oil industry or who was a lobbyist for the oil industry.
Yeah, I made a joke this morning. I could tell who probably worked for the oil companies here in D.C. because about 10-15% of the people on the trains this morning gave me kind of dirty looks. Everyone else was laughing and smiling, so
okay.
Kind of narrowed it down.
All right. Jacob, every year, last year, I think it was a giant pizza he came as. Jacob is into Halloween. So, Crockett Keller, turns out he had said, if you are a socialist liberal or voted for the current commander-in-chief, please do not take this class. I consider all Muslims our enemies, no matter how nice they are. He's, I guess, walking that back. I don't know. Anyhow, moving along. Herman Cain, just a few minutes ago, after the first couple of hours this morning, after Politico broke this story that he was accused of sexual harassment by two women back when he was the head of the National Restaurant Association, basically one of the biggest lobbyists in the city, although I think as the CEO of the Restaurant Association, it's a trade association. They actually hire their lobbyists, so he was the employer of lobbyists. But basically, I mean, they're, you know, looking out for the interests of the restaurants here in the city. That two of the women working there had to leave because they felt such a hostile workplace as a result of him, and they were paid off. And so he went on Fox finally after refusing to answer the question numerous times. And then speaking this morning at the American Enterprise Association, or one of the competitive, whatever it is, and one of those right-wing groups that is probably funded by the Koch brothers directly or indirectly, or their varied friendly associations. He went on Fox and said, yes, I was accused, or he was accused, and that he was falsely accused. And that there was a settlement. So, interesting stuff. The New York Police Department, a new tactic. Let's not do like Oakland did and throw and shoot bullets, rubber bullets and tear gas grenades into the crowd. After all, we still have a young man, Scott Olson, in the hospital in California. Actually, on this very day, I'm not sure if he's still in the hospital, but he certainly was last Friday. Apparently with brain damage as a result of being hit in the head with one of these gas canisters fired by the police. Instead of doing that, they're firing homeless people and drunks and schizophrenics at Zuccotti Park, telling them, hey, you know, you want some free food? Here's where you go. That's not funny. And there's actually quite a bit that has been going on relevant to this. In fact, I had marked up that page, and now it is gone. Oh, here it is, right here. First of all, on Friday in New York, the police confiscated the generators just as the snowstorm was coming. I gave a talk on Saturday this weekend at the coffee party gig here, which was put together before the Occupy movements had come into being, which is why back then I had said, sure, I'll come in and give a talk because my sense of the Occupy movements is that they're not so much, hey, you know, let's bring in somebody to talk. But, you know, they're about small D democracy. Here we are. We're the people. We're doing the work. We're, you know, but in any case, this weekend was a very interesting weekend here in D.C. and around the country in Austin, Nashville, San Diego and Portland, Oregon and Denver. Police busted up occupations. And Oakland, where we had this police riot last week that ended up with this young man so badly injured in the hospital, they're calling for a citywide strike for Wednesday, November 2nd, which is day after tomorrow, for Wednesday, for people to simply say, no, not going to show up for work today. Because the 1% can't make their money if the 99% don't show up for work. It's like, you know, the really rich in this country are really rich because the 99% are doing the work that helps make them rich and buying the products that makes them rich. And so if people stop buying and stop working, you got no 1%. Outside of maybe the leeches on Wall Street who are just churning things and making hundreds of millions or billions of dollars. Occupy Denver, by the way, you can see it over on their website. They had two of their, they call them demonstrators. I'm going to start calling them patriots. Two of the Occupy Denver patriots. We need to change our language here. And, you know, Frank Luntz is the guy on the right. I wrote a book about this, you know, Cracking the Code on the Left. So two of the patriots who were at the Occupy Denver event were assaulted during a Fox News interview. Apparently an attempt to make them fight back so that Fox News could say, oh, look at this, violence at in Denver. And they didn't fight back. And then the assailants, the people who assaulted these Occupy patriots, walked off with the Fox News crew. So apparently this was a setup from Fox so-called news, also known as GOP TV. You know, when Roger Ailes first proposed this to Richard Nixon, it was called GOP TV.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
But the Herman Cain story, there's a dimension to this that isn't being discussed in the press that I'll tell you about right after this.
Man, this is Spooksville.
Just moved in a new house today. Moving was hard, but I got squared away. Bells started ringing and chain ran loud. You out moved in a haunted house.
34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Halloween it is. And we will be talking about that a little more as we go through the date. Stephen Larson, Dr. Stephen Larson is going to be with us in the next hour to talk about the origins of Halloween. This is the Herman Cain story that the media is playing out right now. It started early this morning with kind of a feeding frenzy on the major networks when Politico released the story that two women had been basically paid off and signed I-won't-talk forms, five-figure payoffs, which could be anything from $10,000 to $99,999, who knows, and left the employ of the National Restaurant Association, this basically kind of giant trade association slash lobbying group that represents restaurants that Herman Cain ran for a while here. I believe it was here in D.C. And they both accused him of sexual harassment, and they both were paid off, and they both went away. And he was confronted and asked about this over and over and over again this morning for the first couple of hours. And finally, when he gave a speech at the American Enterprise Institute or whatever it is, they all sound the same. One of those, I think that was the one. One of those right-wing think tanks, the ground rules were you shall not ask him about sexual harassment, and they locked the reporters in the room until after he left. And then he went on Fox News and sort of came clean. Now, this is the story that was denied just an hour earlier by his campaign manager. Here he is on Fox News just a short while ago.
Presidential candidate Herman Cain. Herman, nice to have you back on the program with us.
Hello, Jenna. Delighted to be here.
Let's start with the truth. That's always the best place to start. What is the truth about these allegations of sexual harassment or sexual misconduct? Have you ever been accused at any time of either?
Yes. I have never sexually harassed anyone. Let's say that. Secondly, I've never sexually harassed anyone. And yes, I was falsely accused while I was at the National Restaurant Association, and I say falsely because it turned out after the investigation to be baseless.
There you go. So this is now his story that he's going to stick by. Now, here's the part of the story that I think is important. And that is that Herman Cain has no, formal campaign organization in all the various states. That he's out. He was giving a speech the other day, I believe it was in Alabama, which, it's not even part of the basic primary circuit for Republicans. Herman Cain has spent the last 10 or 15 years of his life making his living as a motivational speaker. You know, the guy who rose from the bottom up to the top. And if I did it, you can do it too. That's, his shtick. And motivational speakers, if they're pretty good, they can give a hell of a speech. They can pull 5, 10, 15, 20, 25,000 bucks a pop to give a speech. And if they're really well known, if they become really famous, some substantial political figures have done that circuit for years and years. And they can pull a lot more than that. And they can get $100,000 per speaking engagement if you can fill an auditorium with enough people. Plus, Herman Cain's got a couple books out about himself and how wonderful his life was and all this kind of stuff. And certainly there will be opportunities for more now that he's a political pundit. Plus, Fox News tends to pay really, really good money to right-wingers who come, who become Fox News analysts or regulars on their programming. So what Herman Cain is running for is not President of the United States. Just like Newt Gingrich is not running for President of the United States. They don't have the necessary ground game in the various states to be running for President of the United States. Newt Gingrich and Herman Cain are essentially both doing the exact same thing, which is using the Republican Party to raise their profile to the point where they can make more money as they go forward in their lives. Or in the case of Newt Gingrich, pay off the debts that his wife ran up with her $1 million line of credit at Tiffany's. His third wife? Fourth wife? I forget. Whatever she is. He started out marrying his high school teacher. Let's see. And then he dumped her when was she the one who had cancer? I can't keep it straight. In any case. And then there was the woman he was having the affair with when he was prosecuting. He was Speaker of the House and prosecuting Clinton for having sex in the White House. And that might be the woman he's married to now, but there might have been one in between. I don't remember. But anyhow, Newt Gingrich and Herman Cain, neither one of these guys are actually running for president. And, they're not serious candidates. But it's become like this circus, this incredible circus. And so everybody's all hysterical about Herman Cain because the media would rather talk about that than the fact that all across the United States, Americans, patriotic Americans, are standing up and saying, we're part of the 99% and we're tired of having the 1% take 40% of the income in this country. We're tired of 400 individuals, the top 0.0001%, owning more wealth than the bottom 150 million Americans in this country. We're tired of hearing the Republican Party talk about, Herman Cain, for example, talk about how they want to raise taxes on the working poor, on people who are working as greeters at Walmart or flipping burgers at McDonald's, who are literally working for minimum wage or damn close to it. They want to raise the taxes on those people who are already paying payroll tax on 100% of their income, whereas the top 1% are paying payroll tax only on the first $180,000. So, Hank Paulson last year made $5 billion. That's $5,000 million. That's $500,000. And he only paid payroll tax on the first $186,000 of that. And after that, he paid no payroll tax whatsoever. And his top income tax rate was 15% because there's a special tax loophole for Wall Street guys. And you wonder why people are talking about Occupy Wall Street. But all Fox and all the mainstream media wants to talk about is Herman Cain and this Republican horse race. And I'm telling you, there's some serious stuff going down in this country right now. Some really serious stuff. I mean, there is... I find it particularly interesting reading the publications where the rich are talking to the rich. I used to like to read the Wall Street Journal for that reason, although it has become almost a cartoon of itself since Rupert Murdoch bought it. But the Financial Times is very much that, and it's one of the few papers that I subscribe to because I want to know what the rich are saying to the rich. And Japan has intervened to halt the yen's rise, right? They're trying to keep their currency down. We are, by the way, crashing our currency right now. It's dropped 20% or thereabouts in the last year or two. Why would we do that? To make our imports more expensive and our exports cheaper. Because we don't have a trade policy, so we have to fall back on monetary policy. That there is the International Labor Organization has now come out today, this is in today's news, and warned of a coming global recession. And as I've been pointing out to you for 3 years, we are still in one. My book, Rebooting the American Dream, which came out last year, was basically all about that. Well, actually, my book, Screwed, which came out 3 years ago, was basically how it was going to happen, who was going to play it out, and why it did, and what we could do about it. And then Rebooting the American Dream is 11 steps to get out of it. And number one is change our trade policies. The ILO is saying, you know, we're going to need, in the developed world, we're going to need 80 million jobs just to get us back to where we were before the banksters crashed this economy and Reaganomics and Thatcheronomics, 30 years of Reaganomics, crashed this economy. And Phil Graham and his buddies deregulated Wall Street and deregulated the banksters. You know, we now have six banks in the United States who own assets equal to 65% of our entire GDP. Tell me that's not screwed up. And you wonder why people are trying to occupy Zuccotti Park, and you wonder why, you know, Jamie Dimon and J.P. Morgan Chase, that he's the head of, gave $4.6 million to the New York Police, and now the New York Police Department are funneling drunks, homeless people, and schizophrenics down to Zuccotti Park. Bill Gates, by the way, was asked over the weekend, "Hey, you think you should pay higher taxes?" He said, basically, yes. In fact, you've got this clip. It's clip number three here. Why don't you fire this off?
I just can't imagine these millionaires and billionaires going down and bear-siding the streets because they're going to have to pay 4 or 5% more in taxes. I mean, it's going to be rough for them. There certainly is a case to be made that taxes should be more progressive, and you know that's being debated by various people.
Do you support the Buffett rule?
I'm not an expert on how we should tax us. Clearly, you can't raise the taxes we need just by going after that 1%. Yes, I'm generally in favor of the idea that the rich should pay somewhat more.
Yeah. The Buffett rule, by the way, is that CEOs don't pay lower taxes than their secretaries. Bill Gates kind of waffling on that one, but maybe we should do something about it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And then on top of this, the other story that the corporate media, the mainstream media, is not going to be telling you about today is the best courts money can buy. We have them. I'll explain. Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news. I didn't know this, that cancer man in the Kane commercials, Mark Block, the guy who's the head of his campaign, who's like smoking in this campaign commercial, it's gone viral and was the talk over the weekend. Again, nobody talking about the 99% versus the 1%. Nobody talking about economic inequality in the United States. Nobody's talking about the corporate assault on our court system, which I want to get to in just a second. But I didn't realize that he had been head of the Wisconsin chapter of Americans for Prosperity, one of these groups that's funded by the Koch brothers. He's met with them several times, four times, according to his interview with Chuck Todd this morning on MSNBC. And he says, they never told me what to say. Excuse me. You know, if the Koch brothers are funding you, I don't think they have to tell you what to say. You pretty much know what your paycheck is going to depend on saying. In any case, he actually committed a crime, a political crime in Wisconsin, and paid a $15,000 fine and agreed to stay out of Wisconsin politics for 3 years. And then it looks like he took $40,000 of his company's money and used it to jumpstart the Cain campaign, which is a violation of federal election laws. So, anyhow, we'll see where that goes. As I promised, the best courts that money can buy, business corporate special groups, and this is the Federalist Society kind of arguably grew out of the Powell memo back in 1974, suggesting that it was time for business interests, rich people, and conservatives to gather together, organize their interests, and start building a conservative infrastructure to protect the 1%, to protect business interests, and to protect the very wealthy in the United States. And that there were many pieces to this. They needed to take over colleges. They needed to take over curriculum in our schools. They needed to have an organized effort to block unions and unionization. They needed to take over our courts. Lewis Powell, by the way, wrote this memo just a few months before Richard Nixon appointed him to the Supreme Court, which is a very interesting story in and of itself. And they have been tremendously successful in all of these fronts, and in particular in the courts. For example, the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, the Business Council of Alabama, and the Illinois Civil Justice League. These are just three right-wing groups in three states, have spent more money on the election campaigns, the nonpartisan election campaigns, for Supreme Court judges. They're elected in those states. And they're supposed to be nonpartisan. This is supposed to be transpartisan. Used to be nobody really paid much attention to these races. Now the right-wingers know who their friends are. And frankly, this transcends Republican or Democrat. This is who's going to be looking out for the 1%. These three groups in these three states have spent more money than the entire labor movement in nationwide on judgeships. We have this, I believe the number is well over 92%. It may be 93 or 94, but it's in the 90s% of significant judicial, you know, not like your local traffic judge, but significant judicial positions around the country are now elected. More, it's actually been a movement over the last 50 years to move more and more in that direction. And what does that do? It allows very wealthy and powerful individuals who have business interests that they're trying to protect. This isn't just basically about, you know, rich people trying to protect themselves, their riches in the courts, because that's really more in the legislative system where you play with the tax code. This is more the front people for, like, you know, the oil industry saying, okay, let's have tort reform. Let's limit the ability of lawsuits. So those 11 guys who died in the BP on the Deepwater Horizon on the BP oil rig, you know, let's limit their ability to sue. Or let's limit the ability. Texas, for example, they actually had tort reform. They limit the ability of people to sue their doctors. The doctor screws you up for life. It's actually a graduated system. The first is $250,000. There's one of $500,000, one of $750,000, as I recall. Maybe even $1 million for a whole lifetime of screwed up. But, you know, $1 million can go really fast if you're on a ventilator and you're 10 years old, and you'll probably live for the next 60, but never be off the ventilator and need 24-hour care. So, anyhow, they actually passed this down in Texas some years back. And it did not drop malpractice insurance premiums in the state, which was the way that it was sold. And increasingly, they're trying to do the whole the same thing right across the board with, you know, workplace safety, people who get injured in the workplace, with this whole variety of situations. Regulation of credit cards, the regulation of, I mean, you fill in the blank. the judges who are asked to interpret the law. And enforce is the wrong word, because enforcement goes back to the executive branch at the local level. You know, in the state level, it'd be under the governor or in the town, city council or whatever. But, you know, to the police and the jails and things like that. But basically, the enforcement is a function of the judges. The judges who are being asked to interpret and enforce the law or initiate the chain of events that leads to enforcement of the law increasingly belong to the Federalist Society, a right-wing front group, and are owned by or sponsored by very powerful and wealthy corporations or individuals associated with large transnational corporations, and particularly the industries that are, quote, under attack in America right now, the fossil fuel industry in particular. So keep an eye out. I mean, this is the right to pollute, the right to meddle in politics. There's a case going before the Supreme Court, the right to engage in genocide abroad with immunity from civil suits. Kyle Olson is up next. He's concerned about how far-left teachers are now teaching Occupy Wall Street in our schools.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. In our first hour, we heard from the fellow who says, or who said, Crockett Kelly, who said, we're not going to teach any liberals how to shoot guns. He kind of walked that back and said, well, actually, he would. It was just a joke. Odd. Odd is a joke. I don't mean him. It's... And a lot of the news today. Herman Cain, of course, taking a whole lot of trouble right now over whether or not he sexually harassed these two women who then got paid off when he was the head lobbyist or the head of the National Restaurant Association, you know, one of the big represents restaurants here in D.C. and runs all these lobbying and all this kind of stuff. So we'll get back into that. Kyle, and some of the other news of the day, the 7 billionth human was born today. And we've got an interview that Jacob did with Buddy Rummer over the weekend that I thought was interesting. And today is the 75th anniversary of a speech by Franklin Roosevelt. I want to share some pieces with you. But right now, Kyle Olson is on the line with us. He's the founder and CEO of the Education Action Group Foundation. The website, Kyle Olson, KYLEOLSON.org. Kyle, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I understand that you are quite concerned that, I believe these are your words, far-left teachers and the New York Times are promoting lesson plans on Occupy Wall Street into our schools.
That's right. What's happening is teachers are now taking the activism that we're seeing in the streets into the classroom. And the goal, of course, is then to turn activists to turn students into activists and then join them in the streets.
So when the Texas Board of Education voted to include the Tea Party activists as part of the curriculum in that state, which means it'll be part of the curriculum nationwide because Texas basically sets the nation's standards because they buy so many textbooks, were you opposed to that?
I am opposed to any indoctrination that goes on in the classroom, whether it's from the right or from the left.
Okay.
I believe students should be taught accurate history without bias, and I've got a book that's coming out in the next couple weeks that deals with this issue. And what I found interesting about Texas was that in the state of California, they actually passed a bill saying that this type of curriculum would not be allowed in California public schools. Yet what has happened in California is they're repeatedly passing bills from the left-wing perspective, demanding that schools teach certain things related to gay history, unionism, and those types of things.
Well, those are the issues of the day. I mean, when Reagan came into office, we had 30% roughly union jobs, and we had a strong middle class 30 years of Reaganomics later, we're down to 8% unionization, and with it, we've seen a collapse of the middle class. isn't that an issue? I mean, isn't that something that people should be talking about in our schools? And for that matter, isn't grassroots protest movements, I mean, that's what our country was founded on. Do you want them not to teach about the Boston Tea Party, not to teach about the Boston Massacre, not to teach about the pamphleting that was going on, not to teach about Thomas Paine?
No, absolutely. That's important. And frankly,
how is this different?
I think teaching union history is important, but that's not, they're going above and beyond. And again, my book gets into that.
Your book, Indoctrination, How Useful Idiots Are Using Our Schools to Subvert American Exceptionalism.
That's
What's your definition of American exceptionalism?
My definition of American exceptionalism is having self-determination, embracing free markets, and embracing the roots that America was founded upon, such as Thomas Paine and the other issues that you raised.
Okay. Now, that sounds a lot like Somalia to me. Basically, no, the government's not intervening in things. You know, George Washington was the first president to establish a trade policy to heavily regulate industry. In fact, our government was 100% funded during the George Washington administration, the John Adams administration, the Thomas Jefferson administration, the James Madison, the James Monroe. I mean, right up to Abraham Lincoln, 100% funded by tariffs on imported goods. Our government was heavily involved in the so-called free market. You think all those guys were wrong?
No, I don't think all those guys were wrong. And obviously, government has a proper place. But you take the Occupy Wall Street movement, for example, and they're not just talking about reforming Wall Street. They're talking about a fundamental transformation of the American economy, and we're seeing that now.
It doesn't bother you that the top 1% take 40% of all the wages in the United States?
I think if it's done fairly.
How is that fair?
How is that? If it's done legally, I should say. I don't have
to. Well,
what's
legal today would have been illegal in 1999 before Phil Graham did away with Glass-Steagall and passed Graham-Leach-Bliley, and the Commodity Futures Modernization Act, which allowed these guys to create out of thin air $700 trillion worth of phony baloney commodities and sell them and suck all his money off the top. I mean, legal doesn't mean right, does it?
I believe that if it's done legally, then it is right.
So if you can buy enough legislators and get them to pass a law to make it legal, and then you profit fabulously over that, that's the American way in your mind?
No, that's not the American way. That's crony capitalism, and that is, whether it's from the right or from the left, that is putting government in a position that will benefit you, and I don't think that should happen.
So where is the crony capitalism on the left?
Solyndra, I think, would be crony capitalism.
That was a program that for 2 years was pushed by the Bush administration.
Okay, well, regardless, it's crony capitalism.
I mean, it came about 8 weeks into the Obama administration. And besides that, it was a drop in the bucket. It was $500 million out of a multi-billion dollar program that has actually shown a profit. And don't you think that if the government is going to say, you know, giving $1 billion a day to countries like Saudi Arabia that send people to, like, fly airplanes into the World Trade Center is not a good idea, that we, the people, should be doing something about that?
I have no problem with that.
And part of that should be becoming energy independent, which means promoting solar energy in this country? And that sometimes you're going to have failures? Or are you opposed to all failures? Nobody should ever take a chance.
No, that to me, that's the American way, is taking risk and failing.
Well, that's what happened when the Bush administration promoted Solyndra. They said, let's try this solar thing, and actually it was one of hundreds of them, and only one of them failed, and that was Solyndra. This is something that Darrell Issa has been pumping up to try and, you know, get some political mileage on the Obama administration, and it's turned into a joke. I mean, it's making Darrell Issa into a laughingstock. Let's get back to American exceptionalism. I always thought, and what I was taught in school, you know, back in the day when we actually taught civics, was that what was exceptional about America was that we were the first nation in the modern history of the world, and arguably, you know, in the 7,000-year modern history of the world, where your ability to be a citizen of the nation did not depend on your genetics, that was what was exceptional about America, that this country was based on an idea rather than genetics, that if you were a Dane, it's because your ancestors were Danish. If you were a Swede, it's because your ancestors were Swedish. If you were a German, it's because your ancestors were German. If you were an American, it's because you adopted the ideals of the Enlightenment, from John Locke to Jean-Jacques Rousseau to Thomas Jefferson. That's what makes America exceptional. What am I missing?
I think that's exactly right.
Then what's wrong with teaching that? Jefferson said we should have a revolution every 20 years. Every generation should reinvent this nation. You've got a generation that's working on doing that right now. What's wrong with that?
I think the question is what America would be turned into. And you know, Occupy Wall Street has been in the news. We're talking about that again today. And what is being talked about there is a fundamental transformation away from free markets.
No, it's away from the 1% owning everything.
No, it's away from the free markets. If you go out into the crowds and you talk to people,
Kyle, hang on just a second. This machine's going to step on us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Kyle Olson, kyleolson.org. You can read all about it. Kyle, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks.
Yeah, good talking to you. I don't get it. I'll be back 15 minutes past the hour.
Frankenstein was the first in line, and the Wolfman came up next. Dracula was a-doing his stuff, a-breathing down my neck. Jump back, make tracks, here comes the hunchback. Better get out of his way.
Yeah, happy Halloween. Welcome back 20 minutes past the hour. Jacob is wearing his bright green BP jumpsuit with black splotches all over it and a BP logo. And underneath the BP letters in the yellow with the starburst with the green thing around it, it says, what does it say, Jacob?
Bad planning.
Bad planning. There you go. Dr. Stephen Larson is on the line with us. He is Professor Emeritus at State University of New York, a biofeedback and neurotherapist, the author of 10 books, including The Shaman's Doorway. He runs the Stone Mountain Center. StoneMountainCenter.com is the website. Do I have that right, Stephen?
Yep.
Okay. And you are an expert on, and welcome back to the program. It's been way too long since you've been on. An expert on myth and mythology and the origins of these things. Where did Halloween start out?
Well, you know, it's I've been tracking, as I sort of thought more about Halloween, I've been tracking two different sources. One is the old Celtic holiday of Samhain, mm-hmm. as it's called or pronounced. It's spelled Samhain, but it's pronounced Samhain. And it is erroneously probably attributed to a Celtic god of the dead. No such god.
Is this because this is the
bindable?
Is this because it falls on the beginning of the end of the long days of summer and the beginning of the short days of winter?
That's right. In fact, summer is Sam in Proto-Indo-European and in Sanskrit. So Samhain really means the end of summer.
Hmm.
And the one grisly thing about it, we have a local, we've always been doing Samhain celebrations that are much more like fairy folk and the veils between the worlds being thin and honoring the beloved dead, the ancestors and so on. But we had a local Halloween thing that had the severed heads of animals all spread around their house of horrors.
Yikes.
And I thought, gee, that's sort of like a really overdoing it on the good old American Halloween of the sort of hatchet in your forehead style.
Yeah.
Really in favor.
Halloween is not at all about Freddy Krueger stuff. It is actually a celebration. Now, on the night of October 31st, they celebrated Samhain, and it was believed that the ghosts of the dead returned to Earth. Do I have that right?
They believed that was the time when the veil between the worlds was thin. But the thing that I found out that actually does justify the grisly is because at the end of summer and the beginning of this season, they had to slaughter all the livestock because they could keep them over the winter.
Ah.
So then it does make sense in a certain kind of way to have the head of a pig.
Right.
So they made, and also the very interesting idea of masking. The idea was that the spirits of the dead were abroad on Samhain Eve, and so it would be a really good idea to put masks on everybody so you can just be as scary as the spooks are.
Interesting. Now, where did I recall growing up that Halloween came from All Hallows Eve or All Hallows Eve?
Yeah.
What's that? Where did that come from? And why the word Halloween?
Well, people always mispronounce it in America. They call it Halloween, and I go, no, sorry, there's nothing hollow about it. It's hallow. Mm-hmm. And All Hallows Eve was really a kind of a syncretic arrangement between the old pagan holiday and the Catholic Church, which in Ireland and in parts of Wales and England, they said it should be All Saints Day. So they tried to assimilate it to a Christian holiday.
Oh, so the dead saints would visit us or something?
Pardon me?
So that the dead saints would be available to us because the veil has thinned on that day?
Yeah, they've always done a version of, kind of a syncretic thing with the saints.
Does the Catholic Church still celebrate Halloween? Or did they at one time?
They've always tried to kind of put it down, but the people would have none of it. In Mexico and in certain, South American, Central American countries, it's called Dia de los Muertos, and it was pre-Columbian. That is,
the Day of the Dead.
The Mayans and the Aztecs all had lots of skulls lying around.
Yeah.
they did human sacrifice.
Now, but in the Southern Hemisphere, this would be the beginning of the long days, not the short days. Or did they adopt the holiday regardless of the season?
But Mexico is still in the Northern Hemisphere.
Mexico is, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And so this would be the beginning of a month of actual remembrance of the dead. Dia de los Muertos is the Day of the Dead. And they do exhibit skulls, which is they're called calacas. They're wooden skull masks, usually. And it's kind of honoring the dead in the old tradition of ancestor worship and sort of including the beloved already passed that are no longer with us. And so they have feasts, and they have candy, and they have the favorite food of people who are passed put out, and you put a candle in the window so that the spirits can find their way home on this day.
Fascinating. And this is like, if this is Celtic, that's a 2,000-year-old, the Celts swept across Europe 2,000 years ago, right?
Yeah, and a lot of the lore is proto-Indo-European.
So it precedes that, even.
Yeah, there's a question of whether there's a Saman who was an Indian, Indo-European god of the dead. But it's kind of stretching things. The early Christians said, oh, this is a horrible pagan holiday. They're celebrating a god of the dead. Think of how awful, think of how pagan that is.
Right.
So they tried to put it down.
Right.
But they never have been good at excluding Carnival or Samhain or any of the pagan holidays. And these, by the way, this is one of the cross-quarter festivals.
Interesting.
So it's not on a solstice or an equinox. It's midway between those.
Uh-huh.
Samhain, Imbolc, Beltane, and Lugnasad in the middle.
Okay. Stephen, we're out of time, but people can learn more at stonemountaincenter.com. Dr. Stephen Larson, thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's fascinating. You discover where these things came from, how they came. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. It's all gets reset. Back with your calls.
Alive. It's alive. It's alive.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, my. We are going to, by the way, as we continue through the day, the Keystone XL pipeline is alive. Talk about the living dead. We're going to get into a debate about that in the next hour. That should be interesting. Herman Cain is saying that, no, he never sexually harassed anybody. Well, yeah, they did get paid off. Well, maybe they weren't. Maybe he doesn't do it. You know, the real story here, Herman Cain is not, never was a real president, a real candidate for president of the United States. He is a cameo president. He's the guy that he and Newt Gingrich are the two guys who are on the stage because they're trying to hawk their books and raise their speaking fees. That's what they're all about. And, you know, why would the Republican Party embrace this? Well, he's a businessman. He's a minority. So, it looks like there's a little more diversity in the Republican Party, which is by and large lacking. But, I don't think it was that, like, crass, frankly, or craven, however you want to describe it. I think it was just, it's like the Republican primary, the party is like so bereft of anybody who could seriously be president of the United States. I mean, you got Mitt Romney, who made $400 million basically buying companies, firing employees, sending jobs offshore. And he's going to run on that. Wait till that comes out. And, John Huntsman actually has a reasonable CV, but nobody wants to have anything to do with him because he worked as our trade envoy to China, which certainly didn't help our trade deficit any, and he was working for Barack Obama. We can't have that. You got Ron Paul, who actually makes the most sense of any of them when it comes to foreign policy, but on domestic policy, he's a total screwball. He's a libertarian, and the Republicans are scared to death of the libertarians. And he keeps winning things in the Republican Party. I mean, he's, if there is a number two behind Mitt Romney, it's really Ron Paul. He just won another straw poll in Iowa over the weekend. You got Rick Santorum, who's basically the single-issue candidate, the abortion candidate. And it's like, what's going on with this Republican field? It's really tragic, and so into that vacuum steps people like Herman Cain, who clearly was not vetted, or this would have come out long before. And in fact, it looks like his campaign manager, who was barred from political activity in Wisconsin for 3 years and paid a $15,000 fine, because as the head of Americans for Prosperity in Wisconsin, he was, I don't know if he was convicted or plea bargained out, but whatever, he was charged with illegal campaign activity and barred for 3 years and paid this $15,000 fine. So what's he doing now? He's running Herman Cain's campaign and smoking cigarettes in his ads. I mean, the real story here is that that the Republicans got nothing. And the corporate media, they want to try and create this horse race. They want to try and really gin it up. They want to get all the messages out. And of course, the Republican message of, hey, the top 1% is pretty good guys. Need to talk about debt and deficit. And we need to go back to the two Santa Claus theory. All this guy, let's pay a lot of attention to this political circus. When the political circus is, it's Sturm und Drang. It's thunder and lightning, but it means nothing. So anyway, a lot of you calling in. Let's pick up some of your phone calls. And Al in Los Angeles. Hey, Al, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You're wonderful, dude. I'll tell you. The Republicans, the basic problem is that facts get in their way. But that's not why I called. Your guest before the last professor, and he was talking about Occupy LA and that they were essentially trying to eliminate the free market. I'm an older fellow, so I'm starting to think, our freedom is not free. Where does this concept of free market come from? Is it that we in the United States maybe can go into other countries like Mexico, open up their borders, and drop in tons and millions of tons of corn and wipe out the competition? Is that what they mean by free market?
Sure.
It's free. How does that come about?
No, it's a Frank Luntism. You attach the word free to something and Americans are supposed to love it. But actually having a free market economically is like saying, hey, let's have free baseball games, right? Which means that each team gets to set the rules when they're at bat. But it's like how much money they have determines how many rules they can have. So the team with the most money can have 5 strikes. The team with the least money only gets 2 strikes when they're at bat. And, so that's a free baseball game because the umpires don't set the rules. There isn't a clear set of rules established for the good of the viewing public, or frankly, for that matter, for the good of the teams and for some balance in the teams. Instead, it's a free baseball game or a free football game. Hey, you can punch in however you want. You can grab people's face masks. You can do whatever you want. You know, we don't do that in sports. Why would we do that in business? It's insane. The stakes are so much higher. The free market is an oxymoron. Free markets never existed and never will, other than just an interaction between you and me, for example. And even that's not a free market. If you and I had a deal that I would mow your lawn and you would wash my car, what happens if while you're washing my car, you smash the windshield? Or what happens if while I'm mowing your lawn, I set your house on fire? I mean, both of us have to have legal remedies. There are even rules for marketplaces that involve two individuals in barter. There's no such thing as a free market. It is a phrase. It is a fancy way of very powerful, very wealthy people and corporations saying they get to run the rules for their own benefit. And you solidly nailed it, Al. You absolutely solidly nailed it. Lisa in Westminster, California. Hey, Lisa, what's up?
Hey, Tom, you want to hear what the banksters are up to? Well, this weekend it was all over the news that the major banks have backed down from that fee business, got to pay a fee to have a bank account.
Well, sort of. They're backing down if you have $100,000 in your account.
Uh-huh, exactly. Citibank, you got to have a balance of $1,500 or have direct deposit, which doesn't work if you're self-employed or, God forbid, out of work right now. Right. Or you pay a $10 a month fee just to have a bank account with Citibank.
Yeah.
I'm not giving Citibank $10 a month. To have a bank account.
No, this is why credit unions, local credit unions, are such a good thing, Lisa, because they are owned by their members. And they have the powers of a bank. In other words, they can issue checking accounts and credit cards and things like that. But they are owned by their members, and the profits go back to their members. And so, you know, it's, I don't know, a couple of years ago when I was in Portland, Arianna Huffington tried to start this thing about, you know, move out of the big banks and move into small local banks. And I said, I'm going to take it a step beyond that. And I moved out of a big bank in Portland and moved into a credit union. And I think everybody should. I think all of us should be moving into credit unions. Lisa, thank you for calling and making that point. It is a good one and an important one. Jonathan in Malvern, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jonathan, what's up?
Hey, yeah, does Kyle Olson want to return to slavery and denying women the right to vote? I mean, has he ever read Lies My Teacher Told Me? What? I don't understand him at all.
This Kyle Olson was our guest who has written this book about what did he title this? Something about useful idiots. Yeah. Indoctrination, how useful idiots are using our schools to subvert American exceptionalism. And, you know, he's not here to defend himself. I can't speak to what he thinks, but I can tell you that there's
right.
a lot of people who think that American exceptionalism means we're the big guys on the block and we get to go around and kick anybody's butt who we want, A, internationally, and B, nationally, that American exceptionalism means that so-called free markets, in other words, the most wealthy and the most powerful get to run the show by politicians, by Supreme Court judges, you know, by races, and that's not what American exceptionalism means. American exceptionalism is a doctrine that goes back to the founding of this country, that we were the first nation to say you are an American, not based on your DNA, although at that time, you know, the first 100 years or so, there was a DNA component there. You know, you had to be white. But in any case, you're not an American based on your DNA. You can come from pretty much any country, or at least any European country, and still be an American. Now it's anywhere, any country in the world. And that really does make us exceptional, or at least it did at one point in time. And I can tell you, when we did our show from Denmark a year and a half ago for an entire week and did our show from Danish radio, and we had on all the leading politicians, including all the leading conservative politicians, and it was really, really interesting. I had the most powerful conservative politician in the country of Denmark on this show, and I said, you know, okay, what makes you a conservative? Are you opposed to the fact that the average Dane pays 56% income tax? And he said, no, we think that's fine. We like the benefits. I said, do you want to do away with your national health care system? He says, are you kidding? We love it. And I said, you want to do away with your social security system that allows people to retire at 63 and you have a national hospice system and you have all this. He's like, no. And I said, well, what makes you a conservative? And he says, we don't want any people coming into this country who are immigrants, who are not Danish blood. That makes me a conservative. And that
is a racist.
Essentially, yes. And, you know, in the United States, we call them racists. In Europe, they're called conservatives. And that's and actually many of them here are called conservatives. But that's what makes America exceptional, is that we say that we are a nation based on principles, not DNA. Whereas pretty much all the rest of the world, you're a citizen of that country because of your DNA. And that really is an exceptional thing. And that's an idea that, you know, more and more countries, they're really struggling with right now in Europe. I mean, Germany with the guest arbeiters, the Turks who came in after World War II to help rebuild the country. Now they're four right. generations down the road, and many of these young people still don't have German citizenship. And there's a huge debate in Germany about whether to throw them out or not, now that there's enough Germans to do the work. I mean, it's fascinating, but. Yeah, I think that a lot of people on the right have no understanding of what American exceptionalism is or how different, how exceptional we really are when you compare us even to the developed countries of the world. Jonathan, thank you for the call, and thanks so much for the comments. We will be right back, 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, more of your calls, and we will check in with the Talk Radio News Service to find out what's going on here in D.C. and around the world and how fast Herman Cain is sinking.
Oh, my God. The dead have risen and is voting Republican.
She's got a hat on 34th and Vine, selling little bottles of love potion number 9.
Whoa! Voting Republican, that's nearly as scary as the outfit that Jacob is wearing today. He's wearing a green jumpsuit with big splotches of oil all over it and a BP logo, and below that it says bad planning. And he's got grease all over his face. Perfect, perfect. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. You can see the picture on our homepage at tomhartman.com. Talkradionews.com brought to you by Goats for the Old Goat.com, Ellen Ratner's work for Southern Sudan. Victoria, I see you are in the Talk Radio News broom closet. I alternate. Some days it's the broom closet, but it's somewhere in between, right? And the luxury suite in the White House.
Boo!
Boo! Victoria, you're not at all scary.
No, you're
pretty nice to look at. What can I say?
Yeah, I know.
So what's up?
Well, I have just been watching online Herman Cain at the National Press Club.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave a speech, and then he took some questions. As you may know, Politico had a story up late last night about sexual harassment charges against him when he was CEO of the National Restaurant Association.
Right.
Which involved a couple, well, more than two women. There were two women who apparently received cash settlements for which they had to be quiet, and they left the National Restaurant Association. And I don't know why we have a bad line.
Yeah.
This is really weird. Anyway, but there were other women also. And this story has really become quite difficult for him. They sourced this story with multiple sources, and they did the research. Do you want me to call back?
Yeah, why don't you hang up and call right back? Okay,
yeah.
We'll do that. And I want to just, while we're waiting for Victoria to call us right back, I just want to add in, that, you know, as I was saying before the break, that I think that the big story here, and we'll ask Victoria about this when she calls, but I think that the big story here is not that Herman Cain used to be the head of basically a giant, you know, trade association and lobbying group. Victoria, welcome back.
It's so much better.
Yes, it is so much better. It seems to me that the big story here is that Herman Cain has no ground organization in any of the states necessary to run for president. He actually isn't running for president. He, you know, for the last decade has made his living as a motivational speaker. And this gig of pretending to run for president, just like with Newt Gingrich, is simply going to double or triple his speaking fees and maybe get him $1 million a year gig on Fox News.
Well, that's part of it. But I would like to, yes, and we definitely should get to that. I would like to tell you what he said, though, today, because it was
sure.
new, what he said today at the press club. He said that in all of over 40 years business experience, he's never sexually harassed anyone. He said he was accused of sexual harassment at the Restaurant Association. He was falsely accused. And when the charges were brought as leader of the association, he recused himself. This is interesting because a few days ago he said he didn't remember any of this. And he allowed general counsel and human resources to deal with the situation. It was concluded after a thorough investigation that it had no basis as fact as far as the settlement. He was unaware and is unaware of any settlement, and he hopes it wasn't for much because he didn't do anything. And he says, we're not going to chase down anonymous sources as per the article. And he draws attention to three sources mentioned in the article. And he says, I told you this bullseye on my back has just got bigger. He has no idea the source of this witch hunt, which is what it is.
According to him.
according to him. So it's interesting that he now remembers a good deal about this, but he says it's absolutely false. And it is interesting that if it is false, either Politico have invented these women, or there are a bunch of women who are lying about him, and he's just thrown them under the bus.
Right. And I'm curious, you know, typically people who behave like that in the workplace tend not just to behave like that in one place. I'm just waiting for the deluge to come. But the larger point, I think, is that the press has been dealing with Herman Cain all along as if he was actually a candidate running for president of the United States, and he's not. And, in fact, his campaign manager is the Koch brothers guy from Wisconsin, Americans for Prosperity in Wisconsin, who violated Wisconsin campaign laws and had to take, as a settlement, pay a $15,000 fine and say that he would not engage in Wisconsin politics for 3 years. And now he's, you know, running Herman Cain's so-called campaign. And it seems to me like this is all about jacking up his speaking fees, selling books, and getting a gig on Fox News.
I think that's a very big piece of it. And if for some reason somebody put him on the VP ticket, you know, why not?
Well, that hadn't occurred to me. That probably would make sense, that he's not running for, he's clearly not running for president. And you know, he could be the next Sarah Palin, I suppose. But the question that it begs is how many of the, if he's not a real serious Republican candidate for president,
mm-hmm.
and Rick Santorum doesn't have any kind of ground forces.
Yeah.
Newt Gingrich is clearly simply trying to sell books and up his speaking fees and pay off his wife's Tiffany bill. He's got no ground organization. John Huntsman doesn't seem to have much or can't get any traction.
He's got nothing.
Yeah. So who are the real serious candidates for president on the Republican side outside of Mitt Romney? I don't see any.
Well, Michelle Bachmann is a true believer. She's a serious candidate, but she's at 8% in Iowa, and she's staking everything on Iowa. So she's in the tank.
Right.
Rick Perry is a serious candidate if he can get some momentum going back, and Mitt Romney is a serious candidate. They're the serious candidates, and at some point it may come back to the Mitt-Rick show.
Yeah, except that Rick has got some really, really nasty stuff in his past that's going to come back and haunt him. I don't want to go beyond saying that, but I do want to be on the record as having said that. Just if he really gets some serious traction, what you're seeing right now with Herman Cain ain't nothing compared to what's going to come out with Rick Perry.
Well, and also the question before he decided to run was, is he Texas or is he national? And so far he's proven himself to be Texas.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that that's why the stories that I'm hearing about him have been withheld. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. But it seems to me like this is basically Mitt Romney's to lose.
It is Mitt Romney's to lose, and yet he still can't get above 25% in the polls.
Well, wait until everybody else goes away.
Yes, then he has to.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, what else is going on?
President Obama issued an executive order today taking action to reduce prescription drug shortages and to fight price gouging.
That's great. The best thing he could do would be to break up the big corporations, you know, enforce the Sherman Act. But, you know, I guess second best would be to say, okay, at least behave as if you were competitive. Thank you, Victoria Jones, talkradionews.com, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, Ronald Bailey says, don't be afraid of the Keystone Pipeline. Really?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes past the hour, the third hour of our program. The only study of the XL pipeline ever paid for by somebody other than the pipeline company showed that building a pipeline from the tar sands of Canada to the refineries, including the Koch brothers refineries down in Texas, largely export refineries for export to South and Central America, would create 4,000 temporary construction jobs. It would raise gas prices in the Midwest by 20 to 30%. In fact, according to TransCanada's 2008 permit application, they said, this is the company that wants to build the pipeline. They said, the XL pipeline is expected to strengthen Canadian crude oil pricing in the Midwest by removing this oversupply. an increase in annual revenue, which will produce an increase in annual revenue to the Canadian producing industry in 2003 of $2 to $3.9 billion. They suggest it will increase the price of gasoline in the Midwest, the American Midwest, by 20 cents a gallon because there's an oversupply in the Midwest as a result of the nearby Canadian availability of this. I don't get it. Why would anybody defend this? Ronald Bailey is with us, a science correspondent for Reason Magazine, Reason.com. Ronald, I don't know if you wrote this piece. Don't be afraid of the Keystone XL pipeline. The Canadian pipeline won't mean the end of safe drinking water. Really?
That's what I wrote. I was looking not at the economic effects of the pipeline at all. I'm looking at the claims that it would cause tremendous environmental damage.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. The Keystone 1 pipeline, when it was built, and this was just all up in Canada, was the Canadian government was promised that they would average one spill every 7 years. It has been in operation for 1 year, and it has had 12 spills. They've been ordered to dig up 10 different sections of the pipe. The steel was made in India, and the same Indian steel will be used to cross the American heartland, including the Missouri and Niobrara rivers and the Ogallala Aquifer. You think this represents no threat whatsoever to the United States?
No, I didn't say it didn't represent a threat. I don't think it represents the exaggerated threats that a lot of people are saying. Pipelines will spill. They will break. There's no question about that. The question is, the claims that have been made are things like that the Ogallala Aquifer would be polluted completely by this pipeline, or that there would be other tremendous concerns about pollution in rivers and so forth. And I think that they've been exaggerated. Again, I'm not saying that nothing will happen. That would be silly to say that. Things will happen. The question is the cost versus the benefits with regard to those kinds of activities.
Well, I understand the benefits to the Koch brothers. They're going to make a fortune on this stuff, refining it and exporting the gasoline to South America. I understand the benefits to all the other oil companies in North America. You're going to see the price of gasoline, particularly in the northern half of the United States, and heating oil go up by about 20 cents a gallon on average because that oversupply that exists right now in the north is going to get exported out of the United States. I understand how, you know, the oil industry makes a fortune on it. The Koch brothers make a fortune on it. We all take the risk. We've got a giant terrorist target running right across the middle of the United States. I don't understand why any American would give a damn about this unless they're paid to.
Well, I think that you're probably exaggerating the concerns about it. The fact is that oil prices are set internationally. I understand your...
Not regional oil prices. Regional oil prices are largely actually a function of supply and demand. In Alaska, where, you know, you've got, or not just Alaska, I mean, there are large parts of the world where you've got, well, right now, you know what the cost of gasoline is in Afghanistan? $1,000 a gallon. That's what the U.S. military is paying Halliburton for gasoline, $1,000 a gallon, because every gallon has to be brought in by helicopter. It's supply and demand in local areas. And the pipeline people themselves, in their application to the Canadian government, said that they expected that it would produce an extra $3.9 billion in revenue by raising the price of fuel 20 cents a gallon in the Midwest.
And what would it have for the overall gasoline price for the United States?
It would have no effect on it because this is for export. This is why they're trying to take it to the Gulf of Mexico. It's for export. This is oil that we're going to be selling to Mexico and to South America.
Isn't that interesting? Because, after all, Mexico and South America sell us oil currently.
Up the West Coast, not down the East Coast.
I'm sorry?
Up the West Coast, not down the East Coast. Brazil, is importing oil right now. It's one of the fastest growing economy in the East.
Up the West Coast. Interesting. I wonder how that works. In any case, the main claim that I was particularly concerned about was if this pipeline were to burst, and you're right, by the way, the earlier pipeline they built has, in fact, had several spills since it's been operating, and those spills had been on the order of basically a gallon or two at a time, which you clean up with a mop bucket. There was one spill that was 21,000 gallons, and it occurred inside of a pumping station where it did not escape into the environment whatsoever. I'm not saying that those were good things. But again, tremendous damage did not occur because.
But why would we want this?
Basically, we want it because it does do a number of things. It does supply possibly other oil in the United States, depending upon how the future evolves with regard to oil supply from around the world.
Why would we want to be even increasing our dependence on oil? Why not take the money that would be spent on taking this you know, Canadian oil from Canadian corporations and handing it off to transnational corporations, refineries in Texas. Why not take that money and invest it through that same area? That corridor that it's going to go through is the center of wind power in the United States, according to T. Boone Pickens. Why not take that same money and build wind farms?
The cost of wind power, by the way, if you're going to start looking at those kinds of things, is basically two times more expensive than conventional electricity now. I also should point out that one of the other things that's going on with the Ogallala Aquifer is, as a matter of fact, we're producing a lot of ethanol from corn there, and by doing so are draining that aquifer to create subsidized ethanol, which is not very useful and not very environmentally friendly either.
I'm not a fan of subsidizing ethanol.
You're bringing up irrelevant, I think, things with regard to what is possibly happening with regard to this pipeline. I'm suggesting you that by pointing to other things that you might do with that money, there are other outrages, if I might point them out, with regard to producing energy that also need to be addressed.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, our policy of subsidizing the production of corn for ethanol, or for that matter, corn to wipe out Mexican farmers,
is
absurd.
A huge percentage of Nebraska corn is being done.
That's got nothing to do with this. So we're sending $1 billion a day overseas to bring in sweet oil. This is the most this stuff is far more corrosive than normal oil. This is tar sands oil. This is basically bituminous.
It is diluted down. It is not corrosive in the pipeline at all. That's a misnomer.
Okay. Well, then back to, again, quoting from TransCanada's 2008 permit application, quote, this is what they say. Existing markets for Canadian heavy crude, principally PADD 2, U.S. Midwest, are currently oversupplied, resulting in price discounting for Canadian heavy crude oil. According to the USGS, via the Keystone XL pipeline is expected to strengthen the Canadian crude oil pricing in the Midwest by removing this oversupply. This is expected to increase the price of heavy crude to the equivalent cost of imported crude. The resultant increase in the price of heavy crude is estimated to provide an increase in annual revenue to the Canadian producing industry by 2013 of U.S. $2 billion to U.S. $3.9 billion. Now, why in the name of all that is sacred would we give a rat's patootie about the Canadian oil producing industry's profits?
I don't give a rat's patootie about anybody's producing profits. My question is it environmentally damaging? And that was the claim that's being made.
Well, burning oil is always environmentally damaging.
It's a 50.org kind of organization. If you want to make other arguments, the economic arguments, please do that.
No, I'll go along with the, you know, this is,
but the problem
you want to release enormous amounts of carbon into the atmosphere, too.
I'm sorry?
This would release enormous amounts of carbon into the atmosphere, too. Plus, it uses a mind-boggling amounts of water.
With regard to the carbon dioxide emissions, it is obviously, it will produce release more carbon to produce that particular type of oil. The question is, and you have to think about this, is this going to be the end of that oil? I think it'll be shipped to China instead, and it'll release even more carbon by being transported in that way.
Well, nobody's talking about building a pipeline to the West Coast, because the Canadians themselves won't allow it in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, well, that's not true.
Okay, well, we'll see how it plays out. Ronald Bailey, you can read all about it at Reason.com. Thank you, Ronald.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. President Obama just said yes to this pipeline. This is nuts.
I got a popcorn ball.
I got a fudge ball.
I got a pack of gum.
I got a rock.
To my surprise, he did the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
Happy All Hallows Eve, or Hallows Eve. Tom Hartman here with you. Jim in Northport, Florida. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I got a couple ideas on why Kane and Gingrich are running.
Okay.
Herman Cain, I think, is running basically as a decoy and was set up to assure that Paul will not be a spoiler.
That's a reasonable assumption. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and then Mr. Gingrich, I feel he was his role is to be like a moderator of the moderators, like when Wolf and Brett and the rest of Fox and CNN get out of line, he injects right on the spot.
Well, I think this is his last opportunity to get enough media spotlight that he can jack up his speaking fees and increase the sales of his books and maybe even be taken a little more seriously on Fox News as a commentator and thus paid better, because he's got a new wife who's got a Tiffany addiction. And, you know,
yeah, I believe that's at least half of it anyway.
Yeah. I genuinely mean this. I'm not trying to be snarky here. I think that Newt sees this as an economic opportunity and probably the last one of his life because, you know, he's not ancient, but he's getting up there and he's certainly into the, you know, planning your retirement stage of his life. And this is going to be his retirement. And,
yeah, but,
you know, and probably the same is true of Herman Cain. I don't know how old he is or, you know, but
I think he's around 60 or close
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, he's, you know, yeah. so he's into that stage of, you know, okay, what am I going to do for the next few years? It'll pay a lot of money and not involve a lot of work. And I think that's probably how they're both thinking, frankly. I don't think either one of them are seriously running for president. You know, now to his credit,
right.
John McCain, who's a lot older than either of these guys, was seriously running for president. Three and a half years ago.
Absolutely.
So, you know, but, you know, and you could tell he had a ground, you know, he had an actual campaign. He had people showing up. He was actually campaigning. These guys, these are cosmetic candidates. And I just find it fascinating. The real serious guy in the room who's seriously probably will win as a Republican or could win as a Republican is going to be Jeb Bush. And he's going to come out of the woodwork in four more years. I think that, frankly, the Republicans, the reason why they allowed John McCain to only have two-thirds or three-quarters as much funding as did Barack Obama in the 2008 election is they wanted a Democrat. I'm talking about the real money and power forces behind the Republican Party. They wanted there to be a Democrat in the White House during the worst recession since the Great Depression so that they could pin it on the Democrats. And it's not over yet, and it's frankly not going to be over for another 3 or 4 years. And so, you know, I think they're perfectly willing to let Romney lose. We'll see. I think Romney's going to put up a good fight because he's his own guy in many regards. But
I'm not a libertarian, but I'm still with the doctor. I think he's going to get close to 15% in the long run.
Yeah, but he's not going to be a serious candidate for president of the United States.
I know. I hate to hear that.
Yeah, he's taking a bite out of the butt of the Republican Party, though. You're right, Jim. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Douglas in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Douglas, what's up?
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
Great talking to you. When you talk about buying judges, I haven't heard you mention the most egregious case that's come to light lately, which is when Massey Energy CEO paid for the campaign of a judge in that state.
Right, the one judge who would have flipped the decision in his favor.
Yeah.
The deciding judge.
You know, I think you should remind, you know, I want to hear you remind viewers of that egregious case.
Well,
I mean, you could directly trace those miners' lives to the purchase of that judge, right?
I believe so, Douglas. I don't have the details in front of me. I remember at the time that it was a story. We covered it here. I just can't pull it off the top of my head. But my understanding, my recollection is that what you're saying is absolutely correct. You know, you just said it on national radio TV, and so we'll leave it there.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah, thank you, Douglas. I appreciate it. Pete in Los Angeles. Hey, Pete. Thanks for listening to KTLK. What's up?
Well, hi, Tom. I just wanted to bring up a point. We have Eric Cantor wanting to, you know, make budget cuts to do disaster relief, yet we've got all these police forces all around this country now attacking people that are, you know, doing their First Amendment rights. We're shooting bullets at people. We're bringing in outside police sources. How much is this costing us or these local citizens or these local states to provide this attack assault on Occupy?
Yeah, it's costing a lot, and it's also diminishing the ability of law enforcement in an era when we've lost at the state and local level 500,000 and at the federal level 300,000 government employees, and some significant chunk of those is cops around the country. We've already lost a good piece of law enforcement, and now this is further stressing law enforcement, and it's further stressing the budgets of these cities and counties and states, and frankly, it shouldn't. You know, they should simply be saying, okay, you want to protest? It's your First Amendment right. You can protest. But it's become this basically left-right war. That's, you know, all the more the tragedy that Fox News has played it out this way. I see both the Tea Party and the Occupy movement as fundamentally populist movements, as grassroots movements that are both symptomatic of the fact that the average American knows that they're getting screwed, and they're getting screwed by the top 1%. And they're to the point where they're not going to take it anymore.
And now we have to pay for the assault on ourselves.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Pete, for the call. And you know, presumably pay for the costs associated with them. I mean, you know, the more people who are injured by the police, if they're uninsured, I mean, it's another expense. But I think the biggest cost is the cost to our democracy, the cost to our. Well, you know, on the other hand, let me argue with myself. The police coming after these folks is an assault on democracy. It also, I think, is waking up a generation. It is waking up a group of people who really never were seriously considering these issues. The economics of today, the inability to find a good, decent paying job, the equivalent of a good union job. The economics of today is for this generation that is graduating from high school and college or has in the last 5 or 10 years, is for this generation what the draft was for the generation of the 1960s. And that's why they're taking, in my opinion, that's why they're taking to the streets again.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Good, Bad, and the Ugly up next. And to the extent that that generation of the 60s brought about radical and transformational reform with a great society and civil rights, this generation will too. That would be the good, the bad, and the very, very ghoulishly ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. The good. Prime Minister David Cameron. While the leader of the UK may not know jack about economics, we could learn a lot from him on human rights. Speaking to the BBC, Cameron announced the UK would no longer give out foreign aid to nations that have discriminatory laws against homosexuals. Cameron said, quote, Britain is now one of the premier aid givers in the world. We want to see countries that receive our aid adhering to proper human rights, and that includes how people treat gay and lesbian people, end of quote. Good thing the United States isn't receiving any aid from the UK, because we'd probably be cut off now. Time to join other developing nations or developed nations and realize it's the 21st century, and gays deserve all the same rights as everyone else. The bad. Ann Coulter. News broke today that Republican frontrunner Herman Cain may have sexually harassed two women back in the 90s. But who does Ann Coulter think are the real bad guys in this story? Liberals! Speaking on Fox So-Called News, Coulter said, It's outrageous the way that liberals treat a black conservative. This is another high-tech lynching. There is nothing liberals fear more than a black conservative. Newsflash, Ann. Liberals could care less about Herman Cain because he isn't actually running for president. He's just trying to sell books, just like you, with your feigned hatred of liberalism. And the very, very ugly Crockett Keller. Keller is a state-certified gun safety instructor in Texas who probably shouldn't be trusted to own a gun. Keller cut a radio ad recently letting everyone know that he only offers his gun safety training to people who aren't Muslims and aren't liberals. Keller said, if you are a non-Christian, Arab, or Muslim, I will not teach you the class. If you are a socialist, liberal, and or voted for the current campaigner-in-chief, please do not take this class. If you have already proven you cannot make a knowledgeable and prudent decision, as under the law, I consider all Muslims our enemies, no matter how nice they are. End of quote. Yes, this is the guy the state of Texas has entrusted to teach gun safety to everyone. Someone who's ready to shoot at the first sight of a Muslim? Looks like we found our new governor of Texas. That's very, very ugly. Well, I shouldn't be laughing. Actually, we had him on our show. He opened the first hour of our show way low, 2 hours and 30 minutes ago. And he walked that back. He said, oh, it was just a joke. It's kind of hard to debate with somebody who says, oh, it's just a joke. But anyhow, Chris in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Well, I just want to address to Buddy that nobody is above the fray when our democracy is at stake and everybody pays the consequences of the 1% total victory in the class war. And if anybody thinks that it doesn't touch them, they're moral in their private lives, they give to charity, it's not enough. We have to stand up and make a moral argument. What are we going to say to our grandchildren when they ask, Grandma, what did you do in the class war? What were you thinking?
I'm assuming that you're speaking to the caller who said that that Occupy Oakland should go away because it's costing money for the police to be there.
It's bothering people, That's the idea.
Yeah.
That's the idea. No one can escape the fallout from these policies. everybody's going to be touched by them. If they think they don't want to get their hands dirty in politics or if their business should be held harmless, no, who are you? This is the consequence of voting against our economic interests.
Right.
Have to pay this price.
Yep. Ever since Ronald Reagan. I'm absolutely with you, Chris. Thank you very much. Mike in Charleston, South Carolina. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, Tom? I kind of had a comment and a question. My understanding of the economic collapse in 2008 was driven by the derivatives and then basically selling these bad mortgages as good investments. So I'm kind of wondering if they're doing the same thing with these student loans that are, you know, about to be defaulted on, if they're packaging these, bundling these, and
yes,
then selling them as, you know, a good investment, which they're obviously not.
Yeah, somebody called and asked that question last week, and I was going to try and track down an answer, and I totally spaced it. It wouldn't surprise me at all. In fact, I'd be astounded if they're not, because if there's any product that they can package, they'll do so. Student loans have now exceeded credit card debt, or will this year, as the largest source of debt in the United States, over $1 trillion. Actually, mortgages are still greater than that, but this is another great fertile area to turn into collateralized debt obligations and basically commodities that can then be sold and resold. So, I would say that's probably the next bubble that they're pumping. The tragic reality, Mike, is that we have an economy that is based on bubbles. And this is what always happens when taxes in the top 1% are below 50% in any country around the world, is that you will end up with an economy based on bubbles. And you know, we've been seeing it ever since the Reagan dropped the top tax rate from 74% down to 28%. And it's continuing. It's gonna continue until something is done about that. And we're seeing an economy that has nothing to do with making things in the United States anymore other than money. And you can't make money out of thin air, or at least you can't for a long, long time. You know, you can for a short time, as Wall Street is doing, but eventually it's going to come back and bite you in the butt, and that's what's going on. Mike, thanks for the call. If anybody who's listening knows whether student loans are being turned into CDOs, drop into our chat room, let us know, or just give us a call, 866-987-THOM. Jack in Seattle. Hey, Jack, thanks for listening to Talk 1090. What's up?
You've got to see the Al Jazeera People in Power program that was just shown over the weekend.
Okay.
It's all about the Koch brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Not only does it show them at ALEC, one of their favorite, has secret recordings of them talking to the audience, but they also had a former chairman of the Community Futures Trading Commission talk about the cost of gasoline, and he said that $1 of the cost of gasoline is based on speculation and that the Koch brothers are into that big time.
Yeah, and that... That has, that's been said before, but I understand Al Jazeera did a hell of a documentary, and it runs, what, about 20, 30 minutes? Maybe it's a half hour long?
25 minutes, and it's getting one of the hottest hits on their site.
Yeah, and so you can check it out at the Al Jazeera site. I think I saw it this morning at democraticunderground.com. I'm not sure, but you could track it down. Jack, I intend to watch it when... You know, when I've got 30 minutes. I didn't have this morning when I first saw it, but thank you for that.
Oh, they nailed it, and you should get some of the guests that they had in their segment. It's fantastic.
Okay, we'll do it. Jack, thank you very much. Paul in Tucson. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Well, hello, Tom Hartman. This is Paul in Tucson, longtime listener, first-time caller.
Okay.
So I wanted to talk about the Occupy movement, something that a lot of people are kind of missing the topic here. And, it was a couple of weeks ago, and please stop me if this had come to your show before.
Sure.
It was Saturday night, 10:30. The police started arresting people, 37 people.
Now, this was in Tucson?
Tucson, Arizona,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tucson.
Yep.
And anyways, one of them was a juvenile, the son of this lady.
Mm-hmm.
And she got out, and then she says, hey, I don't have the money to get my son out of, juvenile, where they took him to a different place.
Right.
So she asked, you know, can I put a can up and people just start putting a little money in there? I sure would appreciate it. And a very short amount of time, she ended up with over $1,200.
Which is what she needed to bail her son out of juvenile detention?
No, it gets better than that.
Okay.
It cost something like $235, $237 to get her son out. So the next day she's on the speaker saying, hey, I got like over $1,000 left here, and I didn't keep a list of who donated. So if you donated, would you please come here? I need to give you your money back.
Wow.
And, you know, these are very, very nice people. I was down there myself with your book, Unequal Protection. I like to show it off. Uh-huh. And I read it twice, and the second time I put little markers on each page, so now it looks like it's one of those geopets growing.
Sure. Yeah, that's what a lot of my books look like.
Yeah, compliments to you who did the research on that was excellent.
Thank you.
But I'm taking up a signature, so it's a good place to go for an amendment to the Constitution, abolish corporate personhood now.
Yeah.
Facebook site, and if I was better than a computer novice, I would have a website up by now.
Well, there's a good one at movetoamend.org as well.
Well, Move to Amend is real close to ours, and I tell you, I tell everyone else, Move to Amend, sign it.
Yeah.
Sign ours, too.
Yeah,
Sure. Don't get caught with one of these Donna Edwards ones, which is just going to plagiarize you.
Well, I want people to plagiarize me. I I'm a big supporter of Donna Edwards, by the way. And who's being primaried by a conservative Democrat in her district, which is a little scary and I think unfortunate. But in any case, Paul, thank you for the comments and thanks for the good work that you're doing. Paul in Davenport, Iowa. Paul, we got a minute to the break. What's up?
Hey, hi Tom. I want to talk to you about. I really liked how you mentioned how there is how lower taxes on the wealthy are creating these massive bubbles. You find a lot of the Ron Paul people consistently say the only reason you have bubbles is because of the Federal Reserve. And they rarely, if ever, want to mention that the Fed and the extremely wealthy, they work together to create these bubbles. And simply auditing the Fed is not going to destroy such as the housing bubble. You have to address those who have the money to make these reckless loans.
No, the Fed passed out, and you know Bernie Sanders uncovered this with the audit that he got, you know, slipped into that recovery legislation. The Fed passed out somewhere between $12 and $16 trillion, much of it to non-American corporations, much of it to non-banking corporations. I mean, it's amazing. You know, when all this trouble for an $800 billion bailout through Congress and the Fed is handing out trillions, that's $1,000 billion, you know, tens of trillions of dollars. It's incredible.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And the two politicians yelling about it are Bernie Sanders and Ron Paul. Talk about opposite ends of the spectrum. With your thoughts on this and what the latest on Herman Cain.
From the war against disorder.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And first of all, Jacob, our associate producer, this weekend, we were at the Enough is Enough rally. He was there, and Buddy Romer spoke there as well. And here's Jacob's interview with Buddy Romer.
Speaking with Buddy Romer, running for president, former governor of Louisiana, and former congressman. Sir, you recently went down to Occupy Wall Street. Tell me about that experience.
It was awesome. You know, the politicians have forgotten the lessons of America. A Vietnam War was stopped by young people. The Civil Rights March was led by young people. You need to listen to young people. And there was a scuffy group. It looked different from, you know, Wall Street. They didn't have a clear agenda. They had different opinions, but they were united that something's wrong with America, and it starts with money and corruption. And I love going there. I'm the only candidate that's been. I didn't give a speech. I listened. I like what I heard.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks.
And thanks for coming out today.
Glad to do it, man. A bright, sunny day. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
And it was actually a cold, windy, rainy day. And that's why Buddy Romer, who is running for president on the Republican ticket, is not invited to the Republican debates, in my opinion, is because he is a truth teller. They're very uncomfortable with truth tellers in the Republican Party in general. They would love not to have Ron Paul there calling him out on the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and the insane drug war and things. Buddy Romer is even more of a populist, something that the Republican Party, which totally caters to the top 1%, will have nothing to do with. today is the today this generally speaking, the consensus of population folks around the world is that today, or more or less, is when the 7 billionth human, not in the history of the world, but you know, actively alive right now, is being born. Yeah, there you go. And 7 billion people is a lot of people. It's also the 75th anniversary of FDR's I Welcome Their Hatred speech. Now, what's interesting about this is that 76 years ago, 1930, was, well, actually, that wouldn't have been 76 years ago. That would have been 86 years ago, or 81 years ago, excuse me. 1930 was the year that the 3 billionth person was born on Earth. Not cumulatively, but the world population reached 3 billion. At the time of Christ, the population of the planet was 250 million. At the time that Leif Erikson first discovered America, about, you know, 1000 A.D., the population of the planet was 500 million. We hit our first billion in 1800, the year that Thomas Jefferson became president. That was 1 billion. We hit our second billion 130 years later in 1930. So I said 3 billion before. That was 2 billion. So in 1930, basically, you know, the middle of the Great Depression, 2 years before FDR was inaugurated, we hit 2 billion people. The third billion was in 1960. Took only 30 years. The first billion took 165,000 years. The second billion took only 130 years. Excuse me. The second billion took about 2,000 years. The third billion took 130 years. The fourth billion took only 30 years. The third billion took 30 years. The fourth billion took only, now I'm getting them all mixed up, 14 years for the next billion. That would be the fourth billion. 87 for the fifth billion, that's 13 years. 99 for the sixth billion. And now here we are in 2011 at 7 billion. We can't continue at this rate. It's not a good thing. But anyhow, back to 75 years ago. This is the anniversary of FDR's speech. Here's FDR talking about, you know, it's interesting to me how what goes around comes around. I really believe that we are living through an era that's very much like the Great Depression, and that Obama is moving, must move in the direction of becoming FDR, or he will not be reelected. And even if he is reelected, if he doesn't move in the direction of FDR and away from, you know, the Bill Clinton Democrats, basically, that he will not have a successful presidency. And this is why. Listen to FDR, October 31st, 1936. Here it is.
Never before in all our history have these forces been so united against one candidate as they stand today. They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
And this, and not only that, let me play clip 7, if you could, Jacob. This is FDR talking about what we had during three Republican administrations before he came to office.
For 12 years, our nation was afflicted with hear nothing, see nothing, do nothing government. And my friends, powerful influences strive today to restore that kind of government with its doctrine that that government is best, which is most indifferent to mankind.
Yeah, and this is the Republican philosophy as well. That government is best, which is most indifferent to mankind, except for the top 1%. That government is best, which provides the top 1% with tax breaks, with huge subsidies, with an infrastructure, a legal infrastructure and whatnot, on which they can build their fortunes and extend their fortunes. So my apologies to those of you I didn't get to your calls. We will be back tomorrow. And in fact, I lost it. Here we go. Coming up tomorrow, When it comes to kickstarting the economy, the more radical the plan, the better. We'll be challenging Ryan Streeter, Conservative Home USA, to see how radical he really wants to get. Plus the best of the rest of the news and your calls. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up and participate. Get out there, tag, you're it. Get out there and occupy something. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.